going to try and get a magician tonight to perform some hands, give some demonstrations of what might be mutter also, but unfortunately we were not able to procure one. In any event, I'm sure all of us have seen in one time or another magic tricks being performed by quote-unquote magicians, and we've heard about all the great Jewish magicians. It seems like this has been throughout the years a Jewish trait. Many Jews have become, Houdini, of course, we're all familiar with, many Jews have become magicians and excelled at it. The question is whether they were doing the right thing up Yalach or not doing the right thing up Yalach. So in order to understand, we have to know that in Torah there are two Isurim which appear in Vayikra. One is Lo Se'onein and the other is Lo Se'chashev. There's an Isur to be a Ma'onein and there's an Isur to be M'chashev. Here, look. The Isur to be Ma'onein is not defined in the Torah specifically. We'll see how it's defined in the Gemara. The Isur M'chashev is more readily understood just on the basis of the word. It means you're not allowed to be a witch or be involved in sorcery. Okay? Now, in order to understand Ma'onein, let's see what the Gemara says. The Gemara here on the top, on page 1 of the handout, Adaf Samech Voma Beis in Sanhedrin says, at the bottom, Ma'onein. Right, you see the box there? Ma'onein, I'm skipping a line. Chachomirim Za'oche Zesainayim. What is a Ma'onein? Somebody who creates an optical illusion, an optical deception. That's a Ma'onein. That is what the Torah forbids. Now, there's an important Rashi here. Look at the Rashi, where I have it. Have a line there. Ochez esainayim, ochez v'soger. He grabs and closes the eyes of abrios of the creatures. Umarlem, and he shows them ki'ilu osa dvarim shapela, as if he's doing extraordinary things. V'hu eino osa klum. But reality is doing nothing at all. It's all a hoax. That's Ma'onein. Okay? Now, if that's Ma'onein, what's M'chashev? It must be something else. Surprise! Sounds like M'chashev is exactly the same thing. Look on the next page here. Ha'M'chashev, in the Mishnah here. Ha'M'chashev ha'osa ma'isa, somebody who's involved in sorcery, and does an act is chayev. What punishment do you get for M'chashev? What? Yeah, you get killed in Beis Din. Right, they kill you, they stone you. Whereas a Ma'onein is only a lav. You only get flogged for being Ma'onein. You don't get put to death.
If they are not using the tumor to...
We'll get to that. Don't jump the gun. We'll come to that later on, okay? Says the Gemara, says the Mishnah, M'chashev osa ma'isa chayev. Somebody who's M'chashev who doesn't act is chayev. V'lo chesanayim, not somebody who creates an optical illusion. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva says, "Nay, Rabbi Yeshua, Shnaim Lokti Kishun Yev can two have two people who gather squash in a field. Echad Loki to Potter, one person gathers squash and is Potter, in other words, is not liable for the death penalty. Vechad Loki Chayev, and one of them is gathering the squash and is Chayev Misa. How so? Ha'oche Ose Maisa Chayev. If he actually does, collects the squash through his sorcery, then he's Chayev Misa, gets put to death. He only deludes the person who sees it into thinking that the squash was collected, but it wasn't really collected. Then he's potur. He did something bad, but he's potur. He doesn't get put to death for it. It's kind of, well, we don't know exactly, because I don't know if any magician who's ever performed the great act of harvesting all the squash in the field. But yes, it's something like that. It's obviously some sort of deception which didn't really happen. All right? That would be the difference between actual kishuv, where he actually collected the squash, and ochez esainayim. Yeah. Right. We began with discussing a magician for entertainment purposes. But in order to get back to that, we have to look through the sources and see what exactly we have, what kind of possible Isurim, until we come back to determine whether entertainment is permissible or not. Now, the Gemara doesn't speak about magic for the purpose of entertainment. So therefore, we don't have an explicit source in that regard. We have to find parallel cases. So let's turn the page. Very interesting Gemara here, which is on Samach Zayin Omen Beis in Sanhedrin. In the box. Rabbi. Abai said, Hilchos Kishofin ki Hilchos Shabbos. The halachos of sorcery and witchcraft are very similar to halachos of Shabbos. Yesh mehen b'skila. For some acts of sorcery, you must be stoned. V'yesh mehem patur aval aser. For some acts of sorcery, you don't transgress any iser explicit in Torah, but it's forbidden by the rabbis. V'yesh mehem mutzal chatchil, and some are permitted outright. What are these three grades? Ha'oseh ma'aseh, if you actually do an act of sorcery, you get stoned, b'skila. Ha'ocheses anayim, if you only create an optical illusion, patur. Then it's forbidden, but you don't get put to death for it. And what is mutar l'chatchila? What is permissible to do? Kikid Rav Chananya v'Rav Oshia. Like Rav Chananya v'Rav Oshia, the Kom Alei Shabbos, every Erev Shabbos, Havu Aski b'Hilchos Yitzir, they used to learn the Book of Creation, which teaches you how to create a golem. Umivrilu igula tilsa. And they used to create for themselves a third-born calf. I know where the first two went. But the third, they used to create for themselves a third-born calf, which is the best to eat. And what did they used to do with it, of course? V'achlele. They used to eat it on Shabbos. By the way, it's an interesting Malbim. The Malbim says, how could Avram, everybody asks the question, how could Avram Avinu have fed the Malachim meat with milk? He gave them milk to drink, and he gave them fresh shechted cow to eat. He didn't know that they were Malachim. What? Okay, but we're assuming there's a measure should say that Avraham Avinu kept all, even the Rabbanans. The Rabbanans are allowed to eat meat and milk together. It's mashma, he gave them together at the same time. Meat first and then milk is together. In any event, the Malbim says like this. The Malbim, whatever answer you have, the Malbim says that the cow was created, they say, for Yetzirah. It wasn't a real cow. They created by the shameless of Hashem, and therefore it's parv, exactly. It doesn't, and so it's only fleshik if it's a real cow. If it's a fake cow, you don't have to wait 6 hours, and you can eat it together with milk. Okay? So, in any event, that's what they used to do. They used to create a cow every Erev Shabbos. Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi says, Chazina le d'lavua de karno. I saw the father of karno, the napitz, that he used to hit himself, Vishadi krich the shiroi and pull handkerchiefs made out of silk minachire from his nostrils. It's a magic trick. Vayomro chartumim el paro. The magician said to Paro, "Etzba lokim he." This we all know this medrash. The as it says that the Khartoumim, the magicians in Egypt, said to Paro, we can't duplicate this feat, which is the fleas, because Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Nikanch Ein Hashed, a demon cannot, Yochel Livos, create Birya, a creature which is Pachos Miksar, less than the size of a barley kernel, and the fleas in Egypt were less than a barley kernel in size. Rav Papa Amar, Rav Papa took an oath, Ho Elohim, really, they can't even create a camel. They can't even create a large creature. The pshat is rather all the other makas. They manage to gather together natural ingredients and deceive people into thinking they could duplicate the makos which Moshe Rabbeinu brought on God's behalf. Here they couldn't even have the wherewithal to gather together enough fleas to duplicate the makos. Amar le Rav Rabbi Chia. Rav said Rabbi Chia, "L'didi chazi liyahu taya." I saw once an Arab. The shakli safsira. He took his sword, v'gaide legamla, and he cut up his camel. V'tarv le b'tavla, and he rang a bell. V'kom, and the camel got up. You see how powerful sorcery is. Amar le. So Rabbi Chia said to Rav, "No, you think it was for real?" Lebesar hachi. After the camel got up, Damu Parsa Miavoy, did you see blood and guts all over the ground? You didn't. Elo Ahi Achiza Zeinayim Avo, it was an optical illusion. He deluded you into thinking it happened, but it really didn't. Zire, Ikla Alexandria Shomitzrayim. Zire once went to Alexandria. Zavan Chamra. He bought a donkey. Kimata Lashkri Mayo, when he gave it water to drink, he went back home with it, and he gave it water to drink. Parshar, so the donkey melted. Vikam Gama Duskinta. And lo and behold, it wasn't a donkey at all, it was a piece of wood from a bridge. So he went back and said, I want my money back. Amrulay, they said to him, Ilav Zireyat, if you weren't Zirey, Lav Amadrin Lach, we wouldn't give you back your money. Me Ika the Zavi Midi Hach, is there anybody who's such a fool that he buys a donkey in Alexandria for low body Amaya and doesn't take it to the water to check out if it's really a donkey or the piece of wood from a bridge? It's your fault. You should have been more careful. All right, but they gave him back his money. Now, the Gemara is we have here a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara is telling us, in essence, that there is such a thing as sorcery, and it's forbidden. And if you do a Maisa, you're Chayiv Misa. If you just delude people into thinking that it happened, but it didn't really happen, it's Potter Avalosser. It's forbidden, but nonetheless, you're not Chayiv Misa. If you do something with Kabbalah, what's called practical Kabbalah, and you create wondrous things. They say the Rabbi Abu Chatzera used to take a bottle of wine and keep pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring, and it would never end. So I hope it was expensive French wine. So in any event, so you see that's such a thing. If it's Alpi Kabbalah, it's permissible. Okay, that's what the Gemara is telling us here. What?
For any reason.
For any reason, right. I mean, it's not good to waste such powers, but it's mutter to do no matter what. Okay, it's not forbidden because of sorcery. However, the Rambam comes and causes... Before I go further, we got a problem here. The problem we still have is, what is the optical delusion which falls into the category of Ma'onain, which we had at the beginning? And what is the optical illusion which falls into the category of Mechashif, which we just had? It seems like both talk about doing wondrous things with optical delusions. If so, what's the difference between one and the other? They should both have the same parameters. How do you distinguish between the two? Okay, so now, in order to understand that, we have to see the Rambam first. Now, that's an amazing Rambam. The Rambam, and we'll come back to the logic of the Rambam a little bit later. The Rambam here is quoted in the first paragraph, all the way on the left. This is a photocopy taken from the English translation of the Encyclopedia Talmudis, here on page 2. You shall not practice the art of Ma'onain. This refers to optical illusionists who deceive people into thinking they are doing something extraordinary, whereas they are doing nothing of the sort. Now, here comes the translation of the Rambam from Sefer HaMitzvos. Creating illusions, such as putting a rope into their bosom and pulling out a snake, or throwing a ring into the fire and then bringing it out of the bystander's mouth, all done by sleight of hand. On this interpretation, Ma'onain is derived from the word ayin, eye, the intensive form of the verb referring to the concealment of the true act from the eye. In other words, Ma'onain means to negate from the eye its true sense of vision and to delude the eye into thinking it's seeing something else. Now, the Rambam is saying something very interesting here. He's saying if you do sleight of hand, if you put a string in here and take a snake out here, that's forbidden. Not only does he call it forbidden, says it's an Isser Daraisa. It's a transgression of the biblical injunction, not a Drabbanon, of the Daraisa of Ma'onain. What the Rambam says. Again, though, before we go deeper into the Rambam, we have the problem. So what is a Mechashif? What's the difference between a Ma'onain and a Mechashif? If Achiza Zainayim falls in the category of Ma'onain, it also falls in the category of Mechashif. So what's the difference? Now, there is a practical difference between the Rambam, which we have to understand before we go further. It's brought down here in the third paragraph, but I'll tell it to you outside. The Rambam says that somebody who does something deceptive optically in the area of Ma'onain gets flogged. Midoraisa. somebody who optically deceives others in the area of mechashef really should be put to death. But if he's not put to death because he wasn't forewarned that he's going to be put to death, so then he can't give him malchus. What can you give him? You can only give him what's called makas mardus. You can only give him flogging the rabbanon. Now, you'll say, what's the difference if he's flogged with a whip because of the Torah, or the difference of whether he's flogged because of rabbanon? There are differences. It's not relevant to us this evening. But the Rambam says a distinction. He says, by ma'onein, for achizas sinayim, you get malchus midoraisa. On a Torah level, you get the whip. And for mechashev, you only get it midrabbanon, not midoraisa. So what's the distinction between the two? So there are a few possibilities here. All in all, there are six. But I'm going to go with you only through four of them. Let's try first the distinction over here, distinction number two. As the numbers here correspond to the numbers in the text. The two forms of optical deception are not identical in essence. The optical deception of Ma'onein consists in apparently doing something amazing and completely unnatural, such... What? The second column, too. The two forms of optical deception are not identical in essence. The optical deception of a Ma'onein consists in apparently doing something amazing and completely unnatural, namely killing and resurrecting, whereas the optical deception of sorcery consists in appearing to do something which is not unnatural, namely planting cucumbers. Okay, that's one distinction. One distinction is, possible distinction, is that Ma'onein has to do something unnatural, whereas Mechashev has to do something natural. The second possibility, the optical deception of Ma'onein lies in his saying, I will show you your future in your palm. For the essence of Ma'onein, a soothsayer, is the prediction of the future as is done by astrology. Whereas the optical deception of sorcery is namely appearing to gather cucumbers when one does not. In both cases, one performs an action. In other words, you know what Ma'onein is? Ma'onein is in essence being super, is having a, is going to seek out what the future holds for you. That's what a Ma'onein is. A Ma'onein is somebody who predicts for you what's going to happen to you in the future. Usually by astrology, but it could be by palmistry, reading your palm. Could be by reading your tea leaves. Could be by looking into a crystal ball. That's a Ma'onein. So an ochez einayim in the area of Ma'onein, according to this approach, is somebody who, through an optical delusion, shows to you what your future is going to bring. A mechashev is somebody who doesn't show you anything about your future. He performs an act of some sort in an unnatural fashion. Okay, that's the distinction according to this approach. Let's go further. The optical deception of Ma'onein is deceit achieved not by sorcery, but by means of a trick. The deceiver does do something which looks marvelous. But the optical deception of sorcery lies in pretending by its means to do something, whereas in fact one does nothing at all. This distinction is predicated on the assumption that that Ma'onein is a trick, but something actually happens. There's an act which actually occurs. Mechashev, there's nothing which actually occurs. Nothing at all. Okay? That's the third approach, and all these will come back to later on. But now the approach which I want to see last, approach number six here, which is our fourth approach, is the most significant. And this approach really comes from the Radbaz. The Radbaz was a posek in the 1500s, and he's considered to be one of the major early achronim. And he says there are three kinds of optical deceptions. One, those affected through burning powders, candles or chemicals. Namely, wax is mixed with certain other ingredients out of which a candle is made and lit. And an optical illusion is created whereby spectators see strange objects, things which have never existed. This is punishable. And the Radbaz writes he saw this once himself. Two, the optical deception of sorcery is performed with the aid of demons or by means of sorcerous acts which deceive the eyes. This is not punishable by death or flogging, because the interdiction is an injunction which involves capital punishment. Lavanitas haras misas basted. Really, one should be put to death. But one has to be forewarned that one is going to be put to death. If one is not forewarned that one is put to death for this act, then one cannot be put to death, nor may one even be flogged. Why? Because any lav for which one can be put to death, if one does it and wasn't warned that one would be put to death, then that person cannot be flogged for that act, except the Rambam says that for that he gets makas mardus. Malkus mirabanan, not midoraisa. Finally, and here's the very important, extraordinary feats performed by tricks or sleight of hand or the swiftness of the hand by which the eye is deceived. The Torah does not forbid this at all. Nevertheless, it is forbidden because it imposes on people's credulity, and this is gonev das. Now, the Radbaz is saying a very fascinating thing. He's saying, me'onein is somebody who uses natural ingredients in order to achieve an optical delusion. Strange ones. He creates all sorts of smokes and all sorts of different effects. But he uses ingredients other than demonology. He doesn't use shadim and all sorts of kochos, atuma, and all that kind of stuff. Mechashiv is somebody who uses demons and all that kind of strange stuff in order to affect achieve the effect he wants. Finally, we have magic tricks, which are sleight of hand, which mean doing things very fast, in order that it seems that what you're doing is supernatural, but really isn't. That last category, the Radbaz calls usur, only because of gonev das. Why? Because you're playing on other people's gullibility. You're tricking them into thinking something's happening when it really isn't. And that's not fair. That's called gnevas das. We'll get to that. Okay? So that's what the Radbaz says. His question was, what if the other people want to be tricked? Which is an important question, obviously. But before that, I want to digress with you a little bit. Right. We're going to come back to that. That's obvious that if he realizes the trick, there's going to be a distinction. But before we come to that stage, I want to digress with you a little bit. Want to come to the Lamaisa. Even though the Radbaz creates this distinction, which makes sense, it is pretty clear that the Rambam didn't hold this way. The Rambam seems to say clearly, like we saw in the beginning, that Achizas Einayim might even be an Isidoraisa. Some optical illusions fall into the category of Isidoraisa, even if it's something which is sleight of hand. You pull a snake, you put in a rope here, and pull out a snake there, and everybody knows that you have a rope and a snake, it's just that they can't really see it, so it looks very, very amazing. The Rambam says that that's what the Torah answers in Moaning. So how do we explain the Rambam? So I want to tell you that it seems to me that the Rambam follows his line of reasoning. And you can turn to, which is known to us from other places, Rambam, you can turn the page. Actually, turn to page 3. In this article, it's written by one of the rabbis at YU, Rabbi David Horowitz. In this article, he traces the shitos of the Rambam, the Ramban, and Rashba concerning medicine. And you know, in the time of the Rashba, the Rambam lived in the 1100s. The Ramban lived in the 1200s. The Rashba lived in the late 1200s, the early 1300s. He was a student of the Rashba, the Ramban. At the time of the Rashba, there was a cheirim in Spain. The cheirim in Spain was promulgated against learning any secular subjects other than medicine. It was forbidden among the Jews of Spain to learn any secular subjects except for medicine, which was necessary. Now, obviously, medicine was therefore held to be different than everything else. However, even though the Rashba had a positive attitude towards medicine, his positive attitude was not the same as the Rambam, nor was it even the same as the Ramban, despite the fact that the Rambam and Ramban were both doctors. I'm not sure about the Rashba. Now, let's start with the Rambam. The Rambam holds that medicine is something which is not only essential, but is a primary resort in time of sickness. If you are ill, you go to the doctor. That's what the Rambam holds. The Ramban holds, no, medicine is not a primary resort. It's a secondary resort. If you're ill, what should you do? Daven. Do more Torah, do more mitzvahs, do tshuva, and get healed by God. If you don't know how to do that, then you can go to a doctor. And there's a very basic, this basic difference in approach between the Rambam and Ramban finds itself expressed in a machlokas as to meaning in a Gemara. The Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin says that Chizkiah hid, he was gones, Sefer Refuos, the Book of Cures. And the Rambam learns that that means that they had all sorts of cures which were based on magic. And it was a bad thing. So therefore, Chizkiah hid it away. Rashi and the Ramban and others learn, no, it was a book of valid cures. They worked. And why did the Chizkiah Melech hide them away? So people shouldn't rely on the cures. They should daven to God. Who wrote it? We don't know. It was an old book, which was around for many years, which when King Chizkiah came around, he hid it away. You know, King Chizkiah was around the end of Bais Rishon, the end of the first Bais HaMikdash. So he found that a lot of the people were relying on it, he hid it away. It's a very basic difference between the Rambam and the Ramban. Now, we also know, and these things seem to be contingent on each other, the Rambam held that there is no such thing as demons. You know that? Everybody here knows that? No? The Rambam says there's no such thing as demons. Shadim, yeah. No such thing. It's all made up, according to the Rambam. The Gra attacks the Rambam on this. He says, the famous line in the Gra says, the accursed philosophy caused the Rambam to err, to make a mistake. Now, there's a famous story about the Kotzker on this. The Kotzker said that Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, both of them are right. There were shadim. When the Rambam came and said there are no shadim, poof, they all disappeared. So the Rambam said there are no shadim. When the Gra came back and said there are shadim, they all reappeared. Because now the Gra said that there are shadim. So I was speaking today to Rabbi Kiva Levitz, and he said, Pshat in this Kotzker is not that he was saying a joke. He was making light of it. But rather what he meant to say, his interpretation of it was that the Kotzker is trying to say whether the Rambam is right or wrong is not really relevant to us. Whether there are shadim or not shadim, it doesn't detract from the status of the Rambam, the stature of the Rambam as being one of the greatest giants of all of Am Yisrael's history. Despite the fact that it seems from the Gemara that there are shadim, there is such a thing. Nonetheless, the Rambam, in his greatness, is entitled to have an opinion about this and not to be rejected simply because he had an opinion that shadim didn't exist. But the Rambam, not only did the Rambam hold that shadim did not exist, the Rambam writes here that all magic is untrue. Here, if you take a look here on page 3, there's a quote here from the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, towards the bottom of the top left. Whoever believes in these and similar things, in here includes Me'onein, Mechashef, all those kinds of magic, and in his heart holds them to be true and scientific and only forbidden by the Torah, is nothing but a fool, deficient in understanding, who belongs in the same class with women and children whose intellects are immature. Sensible people, however, who possess sound mental faculties, know by clear proofs that all these practices which the Torah has prohibited have no scientific basis, but are chimerical and inane, and that only those deficient in knowledge are attracted by these follies, and for their sake leave the ways of truth. The Torah, therefore, in forbidding all these follies, exhorts us, thou shalt be wholehearted, tamim, with the Lord thy God, tamim tiyeh Hashem Elokecha. Now, It's interesting, as this fellow Rabbi Horowitz points out, you know, the Rambam does paskin, though, which is ironic, that on Shabbos, one is allowed to wear a kameya into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Anybody know what a kameya is? An amulet. An amulet is magic. If you hold it that there is such a thing, there's valid, there's real magic in that it works, so then I don't understand why you're allowed to wear an amulet out to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, because it's doing something for you. But if it's all a bunch of baloney, it doesn't really work. So why would you be allowed to wear it out into the public domain on Shabbos? It's carrying something, which has no value, no use. Kameya? The Rambam holds that kameyas don't work. Says none of that works. By the way, not all kameyas are based on Kabbalah. There are other kameyas which have to do with symbols and shapes. Not all of them are based on Kabbalah. But in order to understand he brings down some of the kameyas in the Mara Nevuchim. If you take a look right here on the top right, he says, it means you must not consider as a difficulty certain things that the rabbis, have permitted. For instance, the nail of one who was crucified, that's a kameya. The nail of one who's crucified has nothing to do with Shemos, just the nail which was driven through the hand of somebody who was crucified, and a fox's tooth. For in those times, these things were considered to derive from experience and accordingly pertained to medicine, and entered to the same class as the hanging of a peony, I don't know what that is, upon an epileptic, and the giving of dog's excrements in the cases of the swelling of the throat, and fumigation with vinegar, and marcasite in cases of hard swelling of the tendons. For it is allowed to use all remedies similar to those that experience has shown to be valid, even if reasoning does not require them. For they pertain to medicine, and their efficacy may be ranged together with the purgative action of aperient medicines. Now, leaving out all the big words, what it means is, they thought, at the time of Chazal, that these things are medically valid. They thought that they work. So that's why it was mutter. Hi, so you'll ask, okay, but now that we know that they don't work, so why did the Rambam, several hundred years later, write, you're allowed to wear an amulet out into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim on Shabbos, you're allowed to wear an amulet in the public domain? So look in the bottom here, on the left, second paragraph. Writing in Provence in the beginning of the 14th century, Reb Menachem Amiri formulated the doctrine that amulets work not because of any intrinsic property they possess, but because people believe they can cure. In his view, amulets are in effect placebos affecting psychosomatic cures. Although the amulets are not intrinsically effective and only objectively work because one subjectively thinks they do, this is irrelevant with regard to the law of carrying on Shabbos. Even for Chol HaShem Bo Sakona? Sounds that way. For the Gemara, yeah. If once, I don't know, Halach L'maisa, something else, but theoretically. If one's subjective point of view is that he is wearing a tried and true amulet, this fact, which itself generates the objective efficacy of the charm, suffices to place the amulet into the category of apparel and other objects that may be worn on Shabbos. If one assumes that the Meiri's view was the Rambam's unarticulated assumption as well, the problem in Hilchos Shabbos is solved. In any event, this issue does not alter Rambam's general perspective upon the matter. So what you have here is like this. The Rambam held magic doesn't work. Amulets also don't work. Why you're allowed to use them on Shabbos is a question. Maybe because of the psychosomatic effect, maybe because of some other reason. Lemaisa, they don't work. The Ramban and Rashba, on the other hand, held not that way. If you take a look, right next paragraph, Ramban's halachic position vis-a-vis occult virtue was diametrically opposed to that of the Rambam. He believed in the power of demons and claimed that the passage in Deuteronomy that prohibited various forms of divination was promulgated in spite of their usefulness. Thou shalt be wholehearted with the Lord thy God was, in his view, an exhortation not to bother with astrologers or necromancers, for ultimately, in spite of their power, God can override their decrees. A totally different approach. He holds there is such a thing as magic, which seems to be what it's saying in our Gemara here in Sanhedrin. You know, about the donkey which turned into the beam of a bridge. So it seems very, it seems like there's a very, very basic machlokas here between the Ramban and Rashba. I'm sorry, the Ramban and the Rambam. And he brings down also the Rashba holds a similar thing, that the Rashba, if you turn the page to page, to page 4, the Rashba says, and he, God, placed these forces in the essences of the existence of nature, which can be discerned by inquiry, such as drugs and herbs, which are known to learned doctors, are particular natures, which inquiry cannot discern, and it's not impossible that it should be the case with incantations, such as there are matters of amulets and the like. In other words, he's saying, God made it this way. There are certain things which work in a supernatural fashion, which we can't fathom. That's the Rashba's approach. Okay, I'm not going to get now into the difference between the Ramban and the Rashba, but the point is like this. If we understand this difference of opinion, we can understand that the Rambam holds all magic is baloney. So therefore, according to all this whole line of reasoning, since all magic is untrue, what is there? There's only delusion. All of magic is one big hoax and delusion. If the Torah answered it, it must be that the Torah was banning the hoax and the delusion. That must have been what the Torah was doing. It's all untrue. It all is unreal. It must be the Torah saying, don't delude people into thinking that it is real. That's what the Rambam has to hold. The Radbaz, on the other hand, following the footsteps of the Ramban and the Rashba, and the Radbaz was also, we should add, a Mekubala, he's a Kabbalist, he holds that there is such a thing as magic, and that it really works. He says he was present, he saw it happen. So therefore, he says, what did the Torah forbid? The Torah forbade specifically the real magic. Either the real magic using demons and kochos atuma, or at least real magic using all sorts of strange phenomena such as smoke in different fashions, etc. But sleight of hand, that's different. That's not for real. That's just an illusion. That the Torah never banned. You know what the isser of that is? It's only the isser of Gnevas Das. It's only because you are tricking people into thinking something's happening when it's really not. That's the difference in logic, it seems to me, between the Rambam and the Radbaz. Yeah. The demon issue. Yeah. Yes. The teacher said your daughter is not allowed to throw garbage out after dark because the demons are out. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know, this is a very, very difficult issue to deal with because you have within a normative Judaism such radically different schools of thought. You have the kids who go around with the red bands on their hands, and the people who think that it's utterly, totally ridiculous superstition. And these are, and both approaches seem to find sources within the mainstream. So there's really no clear-cut answer to give. Do you know, nobody know, you don't know, not everybody knows about the red bands? The red bands, there's some sort of tradition that you take a red string, which is wrapped around Kever Rachel, 7 times, I think, and you cut. They take the red string and they cut it up, and girls wear it. Girls and boys wear it till they get married. I'm not sure exactly what the pregnant women also. I'm not sure exactly what the halachas of this are. But I once against Ein Hara, right? But I once got from some fundraising organization in New York. I got a plastic credit card sized card, which had a little piece of the string in it. So I guess in modern technology, it doesn't have to be on your hand. It can also be in your wallet and your yotze. But in any event, these are things which some people believe very strongly in, and some people hold it totally Irish guide. So it's hard for me to come and say, you know, either way. There are certain things which we find in the Gemara. The things that's more like not throwing out one's nails after one cuts them, and there are things in the Kabbalah, which are other things which are brought down. So, yeah, there are certain things which are brought down, which one should definitely be careful about. The other stuff which is added, it's hard to say. A lot of it is just plain superstition. Okay, what to do with the teacher, I don't know. That's a question on how to handle a situation which I'm not competent to answer. Yeah. Yes. If you believe it's true, then you might be transgressing Ma'onin unless it comes from a source which is legitimate. In other words, it's hard to say, you know, since there's so many different schools of thought and so many different people who had a smattering of knowledge of Kabbalah, so who's to say maybe somebody did have some sort of logic which they came up with when said, you know, this is something which is, makes sense, a pi Kabbalah within Judaism. And it's not something we're taking from the outside. What? Why shouldn't it be? Because if you would be able to bring a source, let's say a pi Kabbalah, that a red thread, red, the color red has significance against Ayin Hara, and that Kever Rachel has significance against Ayin Hara, and you combine the two, so you wouldn't be doing something which is Ma'onein. You're not. Yeah, okay. Whether a person would have, the person who made this up would have to be knowledgeable. But now, if something like this is lost, you know, in the warp of antiquity, we don't know who made it up. But one can make I can make for you a case. We know that red wards off, red is a color which has a lot of power. And we know that this Yosef, who is the son of Rachel, Lo Sholap O Ayin Hara, right? That Chazal tell us. It's Ben Paras Yosef, Ben Paras Ale Ayin. So one could say, you know what? The color red combined with Kever Rochel must be that for sure is a reward of any Ayin Hara. So such a person was not coming to his conclusion based on some arbitrary superstition which he made up, like not walking under a ladder, but rather it was coming to his conclusion based on what he thought were Kabbalistic sources. Because we believe that, because there is such a thing as Ayin Hara. If there is such a thing as Ayin Hara, which Chazal tells us there is, and if there is such a thing, which is not a discussion for tonight, but there is such a thing as Ayin Hara, and there are certain safeguards against Ayin Hara, so it's not Ma'onein to say, you know what, this makes sense that this is a safeguard against Ayin Hara. It might be foolish then, but it won't be Ma'onein. Depending again on what the source is. Now, I'm afraid, you know, so lucky I have nobody here, who's attacking me on this. It's quite possible that the red thread on Kever Rachel does have some valid source. I don't know. But I'm just saying that this would be a good example of something which could be, on the one hand, superstition and totally groundless, but could be, on the other hand, based on some Kabbalistic source.
If it's true, yeah. It's not moaning.
That's right. If it's true, it's not moaning. That's basically what I'm trying to say. If it's true and it comes from a viable source. And a viable source, I'm defining, is somebody who put Kabbalistic or even philosophical logic together and came up with this minhag. Yeah. I'm sorry, Ken, it's hard to hear. If you put the rope on one side... Well, if a person puts out the rope in one side and takes a snake out of the other side of his shirt, he's trying to delude the people into thinking that the rope changed into a snake. And that's not possible. Ropes can't change into snakes. And if he does change a rope into a snake, then it's Ruach HaTur. No. Let's backtrack. You know, let's backtrack to Aaron, to Moshe and Aaron. Moshe and Aaron had a staff, which they threw down on the ground, and it became a snake. And that was obviously not Ma'onein or Mechashev. Why? Because they did it with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's consent and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command. And they did it through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When the Mechashevim in Egypt, assuming sorcery does work, like the Ramban, when the Mechashevim in Egypt took their staffs, and threw them down and made snakes, then that was forbidden. Why? Because they were achieving the same effect through Kocho Satuma, through forbidden means. When you take a stick, staff, and throw it down and make it into a snake, then you're doing either one of two things, one of three things. Either you're doing something with Kabbalah, in which case it's mutter, or you're doing it with magic, sorcery, in which case it's aser. Or you're deluding people into thinking that you can make a snake into a staff into a snake, in which case, according to the Radbaz, at the very least you're transgressing Gonev Das. According to the Rambam, there is no distinction between creating a snake from a staff through magic and creating a snake from a staff through quickness and sleight of hand. Why? Because he can create a snake from a staff through magic. He holds that the magicians in Egypt who did it were being treacherous. They had staffs in which they had snakes, and they threw it down, and the staffs disappeared, and the snakes, the staffs broke apart, and the snakes came out, or some other trick like that. So according to the Rambam, in and of itself, no matter which way, even by sleight of hand, you make a staff into a snake, you transgress the Issa Daraisa of Maoni. No, the Rambam doesn't believe in Koach HaTuma.
How does it explain by Shmuel HaNavi
By Shmuel HaNavi? By the Baal HaSov? First of all, he doesn't address it as far as I know. But if he did, he would say that there was something like a Navur. What? Yeah, it was... But it could be that in the old days when there was the power of Navur, there was a power to bring about those things even if you weren't a Navi. In other words, yeah, but now, but the Derech HaTuma, having a vision, but Derech HaTuma is not the same thing. No, I'm gonna take this back a second. The Rambam holds that the fight between Yaakov and the Malach was a dream. Okay, the Ramban attacks him. Dream the dream. Sometimes you wake up from a dream and with a stomach ache, because in your dream you ate some rotten food. I'm telling you what the Rambam says. The Ramban argues on him. The Ramban says, Chas v'sholom. But certain things can take place, and you think they take place and don't necessarily take place. There's a dream. The Rambam could say that it was a dream, that by the Baal HaSov was a dream. What? In the Pasuk says, he says that this is what, just like he says by the Malach and Yaakov fighting, he'll say the same thing by the Baal HaSov. I don't know that for a fact. I'm telling you, I don't know what the Rambam holds by Baal HaSov. You caught me with a good question, I don't have an answer. But maybe that's what the Rambam would say. But the Rambam doesn't hold of the concept of Kochos HaTuma. That's what he says. He says in not Lochos. He says there is no such thing. The other answer I would give you is to say that once upon a time there was. When, just like there was once upon a time we had Nevuah and now we don't have it anymore, once upon a time there was a special koach to bring about visions, Bederech HaTuma. But even then, the Rambam would hold it was limited to visions. But he couldn't produce any results through the Derech HaTuma. All he could do is see things, but not produce things and do things. And that's why the Rambam holds that magic is not true. Because magic means doing something, not just seeing something. And seeing something, yes, but doing something not. So that's what the Baal HaSov was. It wasn't doing anything, it was seeing something. Yeah, but Shaul saw through her. Right, Shaul saw through her. All right. But by the way, and there's another answer I can give, just on the spot, so I don't know if any of these are right. But Shaul was a Navi. So it could be that Shaul had a Nevuah. It's just that he only managed to get himself into the state of Nevuah through being by the Baal HaSov. But really, it was Shaul's own Nevuah. He saw Shmuel. He thought it was the Baal HaSov, but really it was he himself. That could be also. But you're right, it's a good question on the Rambam. I mean, all the Rishonim ask on the Ramban and the Rashba, and every Rishon asks on the Rambam, it seems from Chazal very, very clear that there are Kochos HaTuma. And Alachas Kama that all the Mekubalim don't accept the Rambam. But that's the Rambam's Shita. Now, but of course the ramifications are like this. If we hold like the Radbaz, that there is such a thing as kochel satuma, and that on the other end there's such a thing as just plain sleight of hand, which is only also because of gnevas das. Like you said before, if the magician comes and says to his audience, listen guys, everything I'm doing is just because I'm very quick and I'm very skilled at doing things very fast, and it's all a ruse and a hoax and it's not supernatural, then the audience could sit there and enjoy it and nobody would transgress any sin. According to the Rambam, it would seem it doesn't make a difference. Since anyway, all magic is just a hoax, a ruse, and deception, and nonetheless, the Torah banned it, and the Torah didn't rely on the fact that it told you somewhere else, you should know Gnevas Das is Osir. No, it gave us a special Isser not to do magic. It must be that besides the Isser of not tricking people, there's an intrinsic Isser in magic tricks, which the Torah is forbidding. And therefore, according to the Rambam, magic tricks, even if you told your audience that they're not real, would be forbidden. However, there is one contemporary posek that the chief Sfaradi rabbi of Tel Aviv, Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, wants to say that that's not shot in the Rambam. Even the Rambam agrees that the only time it's called Ma'onein is Achiza Seinayim B'Tachbulos Gedolos. That is the language of the Rambam. With great strategies. In other words, acts which really look like they're magic. If I can take a quarter and put it and make it disappear because I have it up my sleeve, that's not real magic. Real magic would be, like we mentioned before, to put somebody to death, to cut somebody in two, and then bring him back again. That would be real magic. But, otherwise it's not real magic. Even according to the Rambam. Now, real magic is not the word to use. Otherwise, it's not the magic which the Torah forbade, even according to the Rambam. That's what Rabbi Chaim David Halevi wants to say. But, Lamaisa, when it comes down to it, it's Machlokas HaPoskim. The Tiferet Yisrael in the Mishnayos, in Masechet Sanhedrin, Paskins, that sleight of hand magic is Mutter. Because of the logic of the Radbaz. Everybody knows it's not real. Why should it not be mutter? The Asei L'Charav, that's Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, also Paskin said it's mutter. He said it's not proper for somebody to waste his time being involved in this learning magic tricks. But it's still permissible. On the other hand, the Chochma Sodom, a very great posek, says it's Osir. The Rambam says it's Osir. It's Osir. This is Achiza Seinayim. This is what the Rambam banned. And therefore, it's not permissible. And therefore, he says, the Chochma Sodom came out very strongly against the minhag at weddings that people do magic tricks in front of the Chosin and Kala. Seems like this has been prevalent throughout the history of Am Yisrael. That people at Chasnas go and try and do magic tricks. So he said, it's forbidden. Because this is in the category of Achiza Seinayim. Not only can a person not perform it, but you're not allowed to watch it. Why not allowed to watch it? How you know it's all fake? Why wouldn't you be allowed to watch it anyway? What? Misayed over there. You're assisting him in the process of transgressing the Isser, which he's transgressing. Because if nobody would be watching, he wouldn't be doing the magic tricks. So therefore, the Chochma saw them Asers, and in his footsteps, the Chaved Aser, Rabbi Avadi Yosef Asers as well. And he says, so we have into the present day poskim, this machlokas, that the one that we have the poskim on the one hand who say that it's only gnevas das, and therefore it's permitted, as long as people know it's not real, and on the other hand the poskim saying the Rambam asur achiza seinayim, no chochmas, the Rambam asur achiza seinayim, so therefore it's forbidden, even if it's done in an innocent setting like at a chasna. By the way, getting back to the Rambam for another moment. According to the Rambam, we still have to define what the difference is between Ma'onein and Mechashev. Because according to the Radbaz, what's the difference between Ma'onein and Mechashev? A Mechashev uses sorcery, uses demons, uses all sorts of kochel satuma. A Ma'onein uses natural ingredients, smoke screens and stuff like that in order to create all sorts of unnatural effects. But how does the Rambam distinguish between Ma'onei and Mechashev. So we have to say one of the things that we mentioned up here. Either he'll say that a Mechashev does natural things, such as gathers up the squash from the field, but does it in does it deceptively, right? He uses Achiza Seinayim to do it, whereas Me'one does unnatural things, such as reading, what would it be, an unnatural thing? I'm not sure what you said before. Yeah, such as killing and resurrecting. That would be one possible distinction according to the Rambam. Or the other one, which seems to me is more likely, because if you look in the Lashon of the Rambam mentions explicitly that Ma'onein is linked to astrology. So it seems to me that the Rambam would accept this distinction. That's a question of whether it's a prediction versus a phenomenon. In other words, if I deceive you into thinking that this is your future and this is your fate, that falls into the category of Ma'onein. If I deceive you into thinking that I just collected all the squash in the field, or that I just cut up my camel and when I rang my bell it came back together again, which has nothing to do with your fate and your future, but rather a question of what I did in the present, that is considered to fall into the category of Kishuv. Okay? In any event, one of these distinctions which we stated before is going to have, besides this one, is going to be the distinction according to the Rambam. Finally, a related point is the question of hypnosis. Hypnosis. Rav Moshe Feinstein is asked, and you have the tshuva on the last page. It's an old tshuva, it's from 54. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked if one is allowed to engage in hypnosis, if one is allowed to be hypnotized as part of a cure, so if one is undergoing psychiatric treatment, or such like, and one what that the doctor advises being hypnotized. So the Rav Moshe said it's not kishuv. Why is it not kishuv? Even though hypnosis is an amazing thing, why is it not kishuv? Because he says it's a natural phenomenon. And it's a natural phenomenon that people are strong-willed and use, you know, the classic watch swinging back and forth, can have an influence over weak-willed people. And hypnosis doesn't work on everybody. Hypnosis only works on people who are not weak, but at least are receptive to being lulled into a trance. If a person is a skeptic or a person is somebody who's very strong-willed, you can't hypnotize him. You can't get him to do things against his will. You can't put him into that trance. So therefore, says Rav Moshe, it's not something unnatural, it's natural. But it says Rav Moshe a couple of things. It says, first of all, you can't be hypnotized by somebody who's not Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. Why? Because who knows what post-hypnotic suggestion he's going to plant in your mind. Maybe he'll say to you, when you're in a trance, that when you wake up, you'll go eat a cheeseburger at McDonald's. So you have to be very careful. Hi, he'll say it's not your fault. You're anus, right? You've been, it's not with your will, because your will was not to eat the cheeseburger. He implanted within your mind that you're going to eat the cheeseburger. So there's a motion, it's not true. Classic case of Gemara Baba Kama. What? A classic case in Gemara Baba Kama is you went to sleep next to a glass bowl. And in your sleep, you rolled over and broke the glass bowl. So you'd say, it's not my fault. I was sleeping. No, it is your fault because you shouldn't have got to sleep over there. So the same thing here. It is your fault because you shouldn't have been hypnotized in such a way that it was possible for you later on to come to such an activity. Then Rav Moshe says, Lemaisa, he would have answered it, because it's degrading to a person. And a person's not allowed to degrade himself. In other words, what's degrading? That a person loses control of his own faculties and is under the dominion of somebody else. That in and of itself is degrading to a person. Moshe says, L'chor, that shouldn't be permitted. You find that a person is not allowed to eat. You know, you're not allowed to eat walking down the street. I'm not talking about chewing gum or sucking candy. You're not allowed to walking down the street. You can't carry a piece of pizza down the street and eat. It's usher. Why is it usher? Because it's degrading. Well, it's not allowed to degrade oneself. So says Moshe, L'chor, you shouldn't be allowed to degrade yourself also by undergoing hypnosis. So he says, no. for the purpose of refuah, one is allowed to degrade oneself. And the truth is, it happens every time. You know, every time you go to a hospital or even to a doctor, it's degrading. You know, the way they make you get undressed and they make you do this and the other, that and the other thing. But for the purpose of refuah, when it's for a toel, it's for a benefit, one is allowed to degrade oneself. So here too, with hypnosis, or Moshe says, despite the fact that one degrades oneself when one undergoes hypnosis, nonetheless it's permissible when it's necessary in order to cure oneself. Okay, so hypnosis is mutter. Getting back to magic, it's hard to say. We have a big machlokas hapoiskim here. According to the Radbaz, it would seem that it's mutter. Why? Because the Radbaz says it's only an isser g'nevas das.
If
the magician will announce publicly that it's all just hoaxes, and especially if he shows you how he does the tricks afterwards, then it would be permissible. But according to the Rambam, we have a very, very difficult problem here. The Rambam is not clear-cut. Rabbi Halevi wants to say the Rambam also agrees that the little sleight-of-hand tricks which magicians nowadays perform are not considered to be the true achizas einayim which the Rambam answered. But other great poskim, the Chochmas Adam, among them, and Rav Avadia Yosef, say, no, the Rambam didn't create distinctions. The Rambam answered achizas einayim diluting across the board, for reasons which we discussed before. According to the Rambam, it might even be Nisa Daraisa. We know, you don't know, according to the Rambam, diluting might be the Isser which the Torah answered. That might be what the Torah came and said. Hi, we had in the Gemara, it said, Potter Aval Osir, which means you don't get put to death. True, you don't get put to death. But nonetheless, this might fall into the category of things which the Torah forbids. So therefore, according to the Rambam, you're involved here in a question of a Suffolk Doraisa. Since the question of Suffolk Doraisa, it's best to be Machmir. So therefore, it's not easy to come up Halach L'maisa. Although it's possible, it's not easy to come out with a clear heter for being involved in doing the magic tricks. However, I would say that one could be more lenient if one is a spectator. Because the Isser Mesayed de Over Aveira here is definitely an only Isser de Rabbanan, right? Everybody agrees that to assist somebody in transgressing an Aveira, which he can transgress without your assistance, is only Isser de Rabbanan. So since it's only Isser de Rabbanan, here we have a suffix if it's an Isser D'Rabbanan, but here we have a suffix whether you're being Messiah as somebody who's transgressing. Maybe it's not transgressing at all. Maybe it's permissible to do magic tricks, like the Tiferes Yisrael, like Rabbi Halevi, like the Radbaz. So therefore, it would since it's only a suffix in an Isser D'Rabbanan, it would seem that one is allowed to be lenient, and if not perform the magic tricks, at least one should be allowed to watch them being performed by somebody else. Yeah. You know, I just want to make one thing clear. I do have one difficulty with the Rambam, which I haven't resolved, even though I kind of glossed over it a moment ago. The Gemara says, a lashna potter aval asur, by Mechashe, by Achiza Senaim, which is mashma de Rabbanan. The Rambam writes that Achiza Senaim is asur mi de Raisa. That's his lashna in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. I didn't reconcile those two lashinas, and I'm not sure exactly how to go about doing that. But yeah. Yeah. Ayin hara, in the most basic sense, means like this, just very briefly. Okay, ayin hara means that if you are successful and things are going good for you and somebody else is jealous of you, then it arouses the attention of the Beis Nishamala. And they're more meticulous in checking, should you be successful? Because sometimes you're successful because the forces of nature, the coincidence, things which have been going right in the world have allowed you to be successful. Not as a reward, not because it's coming to you, but because that's the way the circumstances have worked themselves out. So Ayin Hara is Ma'orer Kitruk. It arouses prosecution in Shamayim and they say, let's check her out. Let's see if she's Taka worthy of having all the success she's having. And then, if you're not worthy, of course you lose it. And if you're doubly not worthy, you become punished for your averus. So that's ayin hara in the most basic sense. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, could be. It could be. I mean, this would make sense. I mean, this is what the if that is the explanation of Ayin Hara. So yeah, if somebody has a tremendous gift from Shemayim and somebody else comes along and says, well, do they deserve that gift? They don't say it outright, but in essence what they're saying is, wow, that's a wonderful gift that you have. So then it arouses a kitrug in Shemayim, and the Shemayim, they check out to see if they're worthy of it.
But, I mean, what does that say for the initial Din B'Cheshbon?
That there was no initial. It says that this says that there was no initial Din B'Cheshbon.
No,
not for tonight. Different time.